Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Get into just like how you became interested in a lot of this kind of stuff and got interested in doing your own podcasts and doing what you do.
Well, I mean, it really goes back to when I was a kid, and you know, I'm sure it's that way for a lot of us that do the paranormal podcasting. You know, growing up, I got interested in the Ouija board, did the Ouija board for a little while until, you know, that one time that I got freaked out and you're like, I'm not going to do this anymore, because it's just to that point where, I mean, it never happened to the point where I had like the board catch on fire or anything like that. Some people right. said that to me, and I'm like, yeah, it wasn't that dramatic, but it was to the point where it was like, okay, it's freaked me out. I don't want to do it anymore. I don't want to play with it anymore. So that went off to the wayside. And then I got really interested in tarot cards. So I started practicing with tarot cards for a while. And then, you know, it kind of died down. I mean, I had that interest with looking into Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and that sort of thing. But not until I was 26, 27, somewhere in there, I started getting the interest again, probably around the time that Ghost Hunters popped up on TV. And then my cousin and I were seeing the shows, and we were watching Supernatural, and we would have these fires and, you know, having a beer, talking about stuff, and we would talk about these strange things. And I was like, you know what? I wonder if there's like an online radio station or something that we could get on to have a show or something. So I Googled it, and I'm like, huh, there's this thing called podcasting. I've never heard of it before, which it had been going on a couple years at that point, and I had no idea. And that's where it kind of all started for the podcasting. We started with Night Stalkers Paranormal Radio, and we had a investigation team of the same name. And then a few years down the road, I decided to branch off and do my own thing with Parasite Radio. And after that, my cousin Eric, who's the co-host of Paratruth, decided to nix Night Stalkers and start his own podcast called Forgotten Truth Radio. And we both stopped doing both of those shows. And that's where Paratruth was born, just the merging of the two names. So after 4 years of doing Paratruth, I'm like, you know, I really want to start doing an episode or a show with just my particular insight into the paranormal, because on Paratruth, it's Eric and myself. There has been times where we have guests, but a lot of times lately we've been doing shows just ourselves, and he comes from a strict Christian standpoint on the paranormal, where I come from more of a liberal standpoint. So
okay.
I decided to start Beyond Reason. Actually, it was handed off to me by Bob Bain from Mysterious Matters. He was going to start Beyond Reason, but he was like, you know what? Mysterious Matters is going, but I think I'm going to, you know, step away. So here's Beyond Reason. And Beyond Reason was actually a show that was on the radio, but even before Coast to Coast, and the gentleman had passed away and his widow
really
had sold the rights to Bob Bain. Yeah.
So you got like a line of succession there.
Yeah. And I actually was able to find Beyond Reason on, I think it was Podbean, a couple of their past episodes. And I was like, well, this, I mean, it really is an honor to follow in these footsteps, because I forget the gentleman's name, but him and his co-host did a really good job. So I was like, I have to continue this dream of Beyond Reason. So then that's where Beyond Reason was born.
I totally understand, man. I can relate, because I feel like I kind of inherited this. So
yeah, well, I wonder if there's like an 18-year-old kid out there that we're going to like pass this down to in like 20 years or something.
You, son, will continue.
Yeah, you'll continue the greatness that is Conspiranormal. That's incredibly interesting. I did not know that. So you've just continued on this like over, I guess, 20-year tradition then with this show.
Yeah. I want to say it was I forget when they went off of air, but it was just a few years before Coast to Coast got going, and they eventually went from the radio to the podcast platform, because yeah. I don't know if the show got canceled or whatever on the radio, but
yeah, that's this really was around like probably around the same time you started getting into all that stuff. You know, you talk about Ghost Hunters. That's probably like the time that I started really kind of like, that was a renaissance for me of kind of getting back into the paranormal. Whereas before I had, you know, always had that interest in it, but like that, for some reason, that TV show just kind of galvanized a lot of people back in 2004.
I mean, I think that really was the starting point of the paranormal revolution. It was super taboo. And even when they first started, it was still taboo to even talk about. Oh, you know, you've had these experiences. You don't tell anybody. That's weird. You don't want people to know that. And now today, it is still kind of taboo, which is kind of odd. We're in 2019 and these things are still, oh, you shouldn't talk about that. That's just weird and odd. You don't tell people those things. But it's become more normal. Paranormal has become the normal.
Yeah, it really has. I mean, you've got now like a plethora of shows that are out there that are dealing with this kind of subject. Let's talk about your ghost hunting group. Because I heard that listening to some of your past episodes from this year, I noticed that you talked a lot about like this ghost hunting group that you used to have. And let's talk about some of the places that you went and what kind of experiences that you had.
Well, we started out, and I don't know if every group starts this way, but we started out doing the abandoned places, like we did cemeteries. There was a haunted bridge in Ohio that we did that supposedly somebody had passed away. I don't know if they were just there or if they passed away on the bridge, but eventually we started doing businesses and homes, and we got to do an active bowling alley that was supposedly haunted. And when we went there, we had done that just after a residence where a child was being harassed by something. We don't know what, because we didn't really catch any activity there, but this child was suffering from something. I don't know if it was an act of imagination or there really was this entity there, because whatever the kid was seeing, it was manifesting as a character of a TV show that he was watching. So was it an entity? I can't say for sure, because we didn't get any EVPs. We didn't get anything caught on camera, or the EMF wasn't really going off either. There were some high points in the house, so maybe it was just high EMF that was this kid was sensitive to, maybe. And it was causing him to see things. I don't know. But when we got to the alley, they had me try and sense what was there, because I had at that point just started growing my mediumship abilities, and I was pretty spot on to the psychic that was actually there for the other team that had actually put it all together for us. So I thought that was pretty cool to be able to be included in that and actually have the right answer compared to a psychic who had been doing psychic readings for however long. So the other really interesting one that we got to do, and it freaks people out every time I mention it, but we got to do an investigation in Jeffrey Dahmer's family home where he killed his first victim.
Okay, that's in, is that Wisconsin? Nope. Or is that Ohio?
Ohio.
Okay, yeah, okay. Yep.
Yeah. And, so that's where he grew up also? That home?
Yeah, yeah. He grew up in Ohio, and that's where he killed Stephen Hicks, which was his first victim. His dad had and mom had just gotten divorced. His mom moved away, and his dad was never really home. And actually, the funny thing is my wife and I just watched kind of a documentary on him a couple weeks ago, and it almost seems like he was, I mean, the biggest thing for him was he was conflicted with his homosexual nature.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things where back then he was, it was a taboo thing for kind of that thing as well. So, you know, when we did the investigation, the house had been remodeled. The garage where Stephen Hicks was killed and dismembered was actually now the living room for this guy's house.
Does he know that?
Yeah. It was actually a rental. The guy that owned it had, I guess, been pretty upfront about it, and the renter was having this activity go on, and so the guy must have just been like, well, you know, this is the Dahmer house, and
gave him a good discount.
He's like, oh, by the way, Jeffrey Dahmer killed his first victim here.
I'll take care of the water bill.
I'll give you $100 off.
Well, it's one of those things where you're like, I would hope that this person was upfront. I mean, because I think in realty, you know, you have to be upfront about these things. But
yeah.
I don't know if there's like this constituent of however long it's been that you don't have to do it anymore. But yeah, this guy had reported activity. So another group that we were actually friends with invited us to go along. So we're like, yeah, that would be, I mean, that would be the crown jewel on our investigating hat, because how many people can say that they've done a paranormal investigation in a serial killer's house?
That's awesome.
So yeah, it was interesting. The few things that happened there were pretty significant. The psychic that was with us said that he saw a floating torso, which we're assuming was Stephen Hicks. My cousin Eric had got an EVP of something repeating his name, and we tried to debunk it. Like, was it somebody outside the window where he was sitting or anything like that? But
yeah,
it was almost a whisper. So there was no way it was like a echo or something from outside or somebody saying his name. And at the same time, he had also seen a gold orb pass by the door, not on camera or anything, just visually. So it wasn't a lens flare on a insect or water particle or anything like that. So it was something that he physically saw. And we were doing a ghost box session in the living room, which was the garage where Stephen Hicks was killed. And the whatever was talking said, "I'm here." And I'm like, "Okay, well, prove it then." And at that same instance, I felt something brush the back of my neck, like caressing my neck. And I'm like, "Okay, cool, thanks. Hey guys, I'm going to be outside for a little bit. You know, I don't feel comfortable in here anymore." So I went out for a few while they finished up the ghost box session. And I mean, it's just you know what happened there. So the eeriness level is high enough as it is. And, you know, to hear some of the history, like he was the typical serial killer. He was torturing little animals when he was younger. Yep. He nailed a cat to a tree while it was still alive. And the nails are still in that tree to this day. And it's just hard to go in there not feeling weirded out as it was.
Well, that's so terrifying, because there's all these places that are, you know, that things happened in, but this is the actual place where the genesis of a serial killer was.
Yeah.
Like his upbringing, right. All the, you know, psychological or spiritual things, if you think it's something like that, you know, like that's freaky, man.
The formation of evil.
Yeah.
Essentially. Like, right.
And it almost makes you wonder, like, was this guy afflicted by something? Because once he got to jail and he became born again, if you will, it almost seemed like he had a completely different change in his personality. So was something going on from childhood until whenever they caught him and he became saved again? Was it he was just kind of a weird child? Was there some type of chemical imbalance? I guess nobody really can say, because all of those things can kind of go into the same category of the mind being afflicted, because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are in psychiatric wards now that were just mediums and they didn't know it and it drove them insane.
Yeah, like, and if there was an outside influence that led to any of that, you guys were at ground zero of wherever it came through, right?
Yeah.
That's what's freaky.
I think there's something to be said for some of that. You got to take it case by case. You know, a Dahmer, somebody like that, these serial killers, a lot of them are just sociopaths and they're master manipulators. You know, like Bundy, I mean, he was the same way. I mean, he would you know, he manipulated several different people. You know, like he just, you know, he was it, James. He had James Dobson really thinking that that he just said it was all about violent pornography. That's what set me off. That's what it was. And, you know, he manipulated him because, you know, it was just all press time and just keeping him, keeping himself in front of the camera. You know, Dahmer, I mean, he could have just said that stuff. I mean, there's really no way to know since the guy's dead. But Jesus did get him in the end because the guy that killed him actually thought he was Jesus Christ. But
oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, yeah, the guy that killed him in jail was had delusions that he was Jesus Christ. But all that being said, you know, there's some interesting material about, especially with like schizophrenia, and not really necessarily, I'm not really comparing schizophrenia to serial murderers, but people that are in institutions or people that have these problems and see these things, and are like, are they, is it because their brain doesn't function correctly that they are handicapped in this way, that then maybe because of that, they can see things that we, with quote unquote fully functioning brains, cannot. There's almost a chicken and an egg kind of quality to that stuff. Are they just that way because they are actually seeing things because their brain doesn't work correctly the way it should function, or is that allowing them to see things more clearly? So yeah, I mean, that's an ongoing debate in my mind.
Well, I think it's the same debate with, those with autism too. Mm-hmm. A lot of people believe those that have autism see the world completely different than we do. And they might be functioning on a different plane of existence than we are. And that's why the physical body cannot function the way that it should be, or the brain even,
right?
Because they're functioning on a different level of existence.
And in ancient times, these people were considered, you know, touched by the gods.
Mm-hmm.
In a way. But, you know, I would think that probably some, like these young girls that were taken to the Oracle of Delphi, they may have had those same kind of conditions. So
it could have been, yeah.
Very much the chicken and the egg kind of quality. Let's go back to what you were talking about when you were investigating the house, and you were talking about the child that saw the character from the TV show. Do you remember what character that was that he was seeing?
It was a cartoon, but for the life of me, I cannot remember what it was, mostly because, I mean, at that point, I hadn't really watched cartoons in years. I had my my cartoons that I loved as a kid, and that's the only ones that I ever really knew. But I'm trying to remember for the life of me what it was. But to me, the character didn't seem at all ominous or threatening in any way.
Right.
But, you know, to cause this kid to have nightmares or anything about it. But that's why we were really thinking that there was something going on, that there was something manifesting as this character to scare him, because the kid had said that the, whatever the character's name was, we'll just say Mr. Bill. Mr. Bill was jumping out of the closet at nighttime while he was trying to go to sleep, or coming out from under the bed. And it was really hard to differentiate if this kid's imagination was just overly active, or if it was some type of haunting or manifestation of some kind, because the parents, I mean, it almost seemed like they were kind of at their wit's end as to what is going on, because the kid had was constantly crying and going into their bedroom at nighttime. And I don't really know, because like I said, we didn't get a whole lot of response at all. Like, I'm trying to remember if we even had anything happened, but I don't think we had any EVPs, nothing on camera.
Yeah.
Like I said, the EMF detector went off, but it was more so along the lines of high EMF coming off of outlets and that sort of thing. So I can't say one way or the other. Was the thing maybe hiding because it knew that we were there? Possibly. Because at that point, both Eric and myself had come back to faith. So was it something that was scared of us because we were using our faith as part of our investigation team? I don't know. But that's the, I think that's the hard part with doing an investigation with where a child's involved, because at what point do you say overactive imagination compared to haunting or demonic activity in that?
Right. I'm curious about if there was any kind of, because it, coming out from the under the bed, coming from, I guess, the closet, that kind of thing. I mean, that's very similar to like alien abduction kind of stuff. And you'll hear that in that experience, especially dealing with children, where they will see something that is familiar to them instead of like the quote unquote alien or something like that. Did you, would you think there might have been something going on in that kind of realm?
It could have been, and, you know, it's only been recently that a lot of people are associating alien abduction with hauntings, and maybe that they're kind of one in the same. Or there was a guy that we had on Paratruth who he wrote a book called Unholy Communion. His name's David Rufino, and he had brought up that a lot of people that are claiming that they're being abducted by aliens, he had actually helped, because it's, in his opinion, it was due to demonic activity, demonic oppression. And if they were to call out the name of Jesus Christ, the stuff would stop happening. But, you know, doing the research over the years, having different guests on, it's not always that way when it comes to alien activity. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So in that regard, what is really happening? Is a demon actually acting as an alien, and then this prayer and calling out the name of Jesus stops it? Or are aliens afraid of Jesus name as well, and that's what's happening? It's just one of those things that it's like, what's really going on? Because sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But in this particular case, we didn't even, I don't think we even ever asked that question. Is he like being taken, or does he feel he's being taken, something like that?
Yeah. See, it would be interesting to maybe go back. I guess this was a while back now, so, you know, we're talking, this kid could be a teenager or even a grown adult at this point. But it would be interesting it might be interesting to kind of follow up on that and see if now he has any experiences, or if the parents have had any kind of weird experiences. And I can almost guarantee you that they probably did. And the interesting thing about what you talk about when you were saying that, you know, he was appearing as this cartoon character that he was familiar with. Well, I mean, this goes right back to the, you know, what Greg Bishop talks about with the co-creation theory. You know, this entity is showing itself as something that is familiar to this child. Granted, it doesn't really figure out that it's radically freaking the child out.
Or I think there's psychological things to that, too, as far as... like the kid kind of, maybe it's kind of amorphous and the child is kind of filling in the blanks with things that are, you know, strong images that are imprinted on his mind.
Right, yeah, yeah. Well, thus it's a give and take between the entity
still,
and ourselves.
It's still a co-creative process.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to say one way or the other. I wish I had followed up with them afterwards, but it was, we actually had taken that case for another group who had put together the bowling alley investigation, they had said, you know, well, why don't you take this case for us? Because we would like to start working with you guys, but we want to see how well you do. And I don't think we ever asked if they followed up or anything. We didn't follow up with them. And yeah, you know, now that you mention it, I kind of wish we would have stayed in touch with them, because if the kid eventually grew out of it, what really was going on at that point?
Right. And see, this is kind of the problem and the issue with some of the stuff in the paranormal field, is they're not looking at the UFOs, ghosts, Bigfoot. They're looking at these things as separate realms. You know, that the one does not have anything to do with the other. And they're not looking at it as unitary. That there could be the same stuff going on. And so, you know, like I've ghost hunted with ghost hunting group here in Nashville before. And I said something about, like, to them about the alien abduction lore, and they looked at me like I was crazy. And I was like, you know, I just want to be like, come on, guys, you know, like, this, you need to know this stuff too, because this is as important. It may inform actually what you're thinking about. I had a guest on a long time ago. He was talking about his violent hauntings that he had in this house in Missouri. And he talked about this episode in his book, and I asked him about it, where he and his son were driving along and they see a UFO in the field. And he just kind of shakes it off, makes a joke in the book about how, oh, well, you know, I just want to deal with one phenomenon at a time. I don't want to deal with aliens, and I don't want to deal with ghosts. And I told him, you know, I said, you know, I think they're related. You know, I think this is a related phenomenon. I do not think that they are mutually exclusive. But through, I think, popular culture, television, we've been given that impression.
Well, I mean, it's only in recent years that it has come to light that maybe there's these manifestations are the same entities just trying to manifest as different things because of interest and that sort of thing. I've talked to Nick Redfern about this multiple times when I've had him on both shows. And I think that he, above a lot of the others, is one of the ones that says, you know, it could be that there is this trickster or tulpa type element to it, or even just an entity in and of itself trying to manifest as something that not necessarily scares you, but you have an interest in. And I think that's where the big difference is between being a ghost hunter and a paranormal investigator. If you're a ghost hunter, you're stuck in that mentality of, oh, all these things are ghosts. If you're a ufologist, oh, all these things are alien.
Right.
If you're a Bigfoot hunter, everything is Bigfoot. Where if you're a paranormal investigator, you take all of it into account and then say, okay, well, it could be that all these things are separate, but maybe these things are all related in one way or the other.
Right. Yeah, that's very well said. I mean, that's the only thing that I think with paranormal investigators that I would say, read all the stuff, read everything, right. You know, pick up, like, you know, I know you're into ghosts or something, but, you know, pick up Trojan Feast or any book by Joshua Cutchin. You know, and you'll see that there are different, that these things parallel and match each other.
Right. Yeah, Josh, I love all of his books, and we've had him on for each one. And it makes a valid point. You know, he goes into the book, and even in the interviews, he says, you know, I'm not going to say fairy folk, but fairy folk.
Right. Well, I mean, and for Josh, it is very much where I think for him, and now Timothy Renner is along with him on this ride because they're working on this book, is that this whole idea that we are, what we're really talking about when they talk about fairy folk is this whole idea of the other. In other words, it isn't that now the fairies have somehow technologically advanced and they're riding around in flying saucers. I joked with Josh about that one time. But it's that the fact that each different period in human history and where we are culturally influences the way the phenomenon manifests itself. Again, that's co-creation to a T. That's exactly it. You know, when at a time when we are primarily an agrarian society, this phenomenon manifested itself to us as the fairy folk. We become more this technologically industrial-based society. Now it's the space alien. And it's like this energy and these entities, they reflect us. In some ways, they reflect our hopes and our fears, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that that's a very valid point, too. Like, we still see the Bigfoot phenomenon now. You know, we still hear about fairy phenomenon from Ireland and Scotland. We hear about the chupacabra, and we hear about these different cryptids, Loch Ness, Ogopogo, and it really is a matter of where your perspective is. I mean, there's a lot of European cultures that still don't rely as much on the technology, so they see things different than us here in the States, where
right.
technology has become one of the staples of everyday life. I mean, even look at Japan, look at the different Middle Eastern cultures where technology has run rampant. Now, you know, they don't concentrate so much on the folklore and stuff, so things have changed. So I think that's a pretty good observation from Josh, as well as from you guys, that it's just a matter of our perceptions are changing, so these entities have to change the way that they manifest themselves.
Yeah. And we don't know exactly what that mechanism is. Like, we know exactly what this other, why that is. It just is that. And I've always kind of speculated that these are natural beings that have been here on the earth for a long time, maybe even before we were. And they're just more of a, like a force of consciousness. I play with the idea of, like, I like the way that the jinn are described in Islamic mythology, and I think that this comes close, maybe, to how they may actually be. In other words, the jinn are described as being this other creation of God, and they are just like human beings. They are good, they're evil, and some of them are neutral. They don't care. And they're just another energy, another kind of life force that is also around. And I think that comes close to maybe explaining it, but I don't think it's the entire explanation.
Well, there's a lot of cultures that believe that there was civilizations prior to ours that are now existing. I mean, some people believe that they've gone to the inner earth. Some people believe that they created these UFOs, and that's why we're seeing the UFO phenomena and so many different types of aliens, because they were cultures prior to ours, and then they advanced way above what we are today. So I think that there's something to say for that as well, because, I mean, even there's even a theory through biblical culture that say, you know, there's this gap theory that between creation and creation of the earth and the creation of man, there was had to be something in between. So was there multiple civilizations prior to ours? I honestly believe there has been, because there's enough evidence of it to say that there had to have been some type of technology prior to ours. I mean, look at Egyptian hieroglyphics. There's been Sumerian hieroglyphics that would signify that there was some type of flying objects around back then. I don't know if you've ever seen the image of a UFO in the Last Supper painting of Leonardo da Vinci's Last Supper painting of Jesus Christ.
No, I've never seen that. That's interesting.
Yeah. There's supposedly an image of a UFO flying in the distance. And a lot of people believe that Leonardo had this theory that actually about Atlantis, and that Jesus Christ was actually from Atlantis, or descended from.
Yeah. You get all the weird, like, Christ bloodline theories and all that. There's a lot of that kind of stuff in medieval art, you know, which is interesting to think about how, you know, the ancient aliens, people say, well, those are obviously the craft there from Zeta Reticuli. But I think there's a lot more going on there. I mean, this to them, I think, was the depiction of the angelic.
Yes, yes.
And I don't think that they would, if you would have gotten a time machine, you go back and you ask them, what are you depicting here? They would say that's an angel. So it's just it's the idea of perception as well. Our perception on this, on whatever this phenomenon is.
And as far as there being these, you know, the cycle of civilizations, even the evolutionary biology is putting back modern humans. You know, it seems like every few years it gets put back another 100,000 years. And to think that they, you know, people with the same capabilities that we have now, I mean, mentally and physically, wouldn't be able to come to places of advancement, you know, over and over again within hundreds of thousands of years, because this current civilization,
right,
we only really know about, I mean, not even the full scope of the last 10,000 years. So it's like, you know, why not?
Yeah, you could definitely have that too going on. I mean, like, have you ever had Walter Bosley on your show, Justin?
No, but I have heard him on others.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, he talks a lot about this kind of stuff, but yeah, underground
breakaway civilizations.
And, I think that there's definitely something to it. I don't buy it completely, but I'm much more of a hollow earth guy than I am a flat earth guy, I can tell you that.
There's a friend of mine who has been on Paratruth Radio, who wants us to revisit the flat earth thing, and it's like, yeah, no, not really, because quite honestly, I don't believe in the theory. And it's one of those things, like, he'll say that, you know, it's, you know, NASA's fooling us, and you know, they're putting the Earth in a fisheye lens, and that's why it appears round from outer space. And I'm like, yeah, but this goes back to, like, the time of Galileo and Socrates, and even a little bit further than that, where they didn't believe the fifth.
Well, it's all a Masonic Jesuit conspiracy to make us believe that the Earth is A, round, and B, not the center of the universe.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is. Okay. And the Nazis are involved, and, you know, who knows? The Odd Fellows, possibly, they may be involved. But yeah,
well, the thing that those
don't
people,
get me started on
the thing with those people stuff. To me is that they're not acknowledging that amateur astronomy is like amateur radio, and there is a worldwide community of people that exchange information that are, I mean, it's an impossible, besides the fact that it's just stupid, it's an impossible conspiracy to, like, withhold. You know, you cannot.
You said it, man. We're gonna get those emails now. But yeah, the flat earth stuff is that it's this whole outgrowth of the conspiracy culture, in that we cannot believe anything the government tells us. So if they're telling us the earth is round, then we can't believe them either. You know, it's like this corruption of conspiracy culture, in my opinion.
Well, the thing that gets me is when you talk to a flat earther, and even on the Flat Earth website, it'll say that, you know, all of these other planets are in this dome that covers the flat earth, and, you know, all of them are round, just not Earth, because it's special and different. And I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, like, even from there are, oddly enough, a lot of Christian people that believe into this flat earth thing, because I think that particular fact that they want to believe that the earth is the center of the universe, that it's special compared to the rest of the planets, that there's no way that there's life on any other planet because God created earth, life on earth, and that's it. And I'm like, that is the most closed-minded thing that you can ever think of. Like, yeah, there's probably not a whole lot of life out there now, because since they're so far away, we're just seeing stuff now that they probably were in their prime, and now it's just dead worlds. Who knows?
Yeah, it's the whole thing is about flat earth. I really honestly think that there's some kind of
psyop
going on. Yeah, thank you. I mean, that's I really think that's exactly what it is, because, you know, people were asking real questions about 9/11, and they were asking questions about this and that, and I think that just that was put out to just make the whole, like, kind of quote unquote truther community look ridiculous.
Not that we haven't had plenty to try to do that in the first place.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's the issue too, though, why it really resonates with a lot of people that are Christian too. And I think that's because that they feel like it really explains things simply, when you don't really need such a simple explanation. And I believe that's what you're getting at. What you were saying is that you don't need that simple explanation, but people feel that they do need the simple explanation.
Well, here's another element. Of course, the excesses of conspiracy theory are being targeted by the media, and everyone is, unfortunately, I feel like, on the paranormal end of things, are like joining in, but it's coming around to the paranormal world too, to strange archaeology, to even alien phenomenon, and this different stuff is getting lumped in this demonization of conspiracy theory. All this paranormal stuff is getting lumped in and demonized also. So
yeah,
that's kind of weird. You know, the whole ancient aliens is racist thing, it's getting tied in and saying, oh, see, look, good Nazis point. Believed in this, right, alternative stuff. So if you believe in alternative stuff, you're a Nazi. It's like,
yeah. Yeah.
So it's getting scary. So I would say to a lot of the paranormal people, like, you know, you're next, you know, you can join in the demonization of conspiracy theory, but they're coming after you too.
Well, YouTube is already starting to kind of take down, but change their algorithms where people aren't finding stuff anymore. I mean, right. I know that, I some other paranormal podcasts that, you know, if anybody listens to the show regularly, they know probably who I'm talking about, have had issues with this. Larger podcasts than ours that have had issues with it being shown that there's new episodes out. And it's just,
and this, I mean, is non-political.
Yeah.
One in particular, those conspiracy guys, they are one of the ones that are a relatively big podcast where they were getting a lot of their money from YouTube, and YouTube completely shut down a lot of their episodes.
Right.
Really? Wow. That's such a non-offensive program. I mean, it's such a, it's kind of just like a review of different conspiracy theories, isn't it? It's not even like, it doesn't even seem like they have an agenda at all.
The other, right.
Well, that's the part, that's the problem. Now, this was actually something that I was wanting to get into with you. I'll get into the main part of it. But the problem is that I feel a little vulnerable here because I'm like, well, we're called conspiranormal.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right in the crossfire.
like that algorithm is stupid, man. It's just going to pick you up and just throw you away.
And I think that's where the alternatives are going to have to start coming into play, because a lot of the mainstream media right now is, I think they're along those lines of what Trump has deemed fake news. So YouTube, Facebook, I mean, even Google is probably limiting how you can find these different podcasts, YouTube shows, anything like that. And a lot of people will say to me that, oh, this Facebook algorithm stuff is stupid. And I'm like, yeah, but, you know, we're still using Facebook.
Right.
You know, we're still using YouTube as a main source of entertainment.
We can't have like this free marketplace of ideas if it's all centered around certain apps, if it's all like a oligarchy of ideas. You know, this isn't a,
right.
We need our free market of ideas. And it's been the problem with the whole internet becoming more of an app based, even the conception of the internet to your mainstream population now is more app based. It's not a wide, you know, web where you can go to all these different URLs. People are just, they're in those apps. They're in these, you know, four or five websites, and that's it. Like, it terrifies me.
Yeah. I mean, even with myself, you know, like, where do I go? You know, Netflix, YouTube, Facebook. You know, that's right. It. That's Twitter. That's pretty much it. I mean, that's where we've gone. We're like, the internet used to be this free exchange of ideas, and now it's just these people are just restrict themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, to these different entertainment platforms.
Right.
And I'm guilty of it, just with anybody else.
Right. I think we all are. We've fallen into that trap of what's popular. Oh, okay. Well, then I better get that app because everybody else is using it right now.
Well, we've got to make this switch too. We've got to develop some alternatives before the net neutrality stuff really starts getting chipped away more, because I think really what's on the table is reduced internet prices for only app-based devices. So there won't be just general data allotted for exploring the World Wide Web. It'll be like, yeah, free internet with your four apps. You know, it's I think that's the real danger. And after that, when people don't even have access to, you know, to other free information on the internet, that's what really scares me. I think it's coming.
I have no doubt that there's going to be a point where, I mean, a lot of people have talked about recently the fall of the internet, that the internet's going to crash itself because it's become so large, that at what point does it keep working with the expansion that it's had? And that's something that's scary in and of itself, because we've become so dependent on free information.
Well, we'll get back to doing like zines and terrestrial shortwave radio shows, and like, I don't care. I'm ready.
Yeah, it seems like that's where it's going back to, or it's all going to be demonized as being part of the dark web.
Yeah, yeah.
But Justin, have you heard about what has come out about Alex Jones in the last few days? Because
I haven't.
I think this is something that now that we kind of like, we look at Alex Jones and we kind of laugh at him, you know, because he's always been very buffoonish. And especially after that 4-hour Joe Rogan episode, if you know what I'm talking about, You know, I mean, that was just a shit show altogether. But I think that this kind of stuff really is going to affect us little guys in the future and us guys that are trying to make a name of ourselves in this. Because what is going on with him, where he has been restricted and taken off all these YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, it's all the things that we have just been talking about. And in the last couple of days, it has come out that the lawyers on the opposing side of this whole Sandy Hook lawsuit that he has been a part of, they received like child pornography from him from this mass data dump that was given to these lawyers. Now, it's come out in the last couple of days that where this came from was from emails that were sent to Alex and were never actually opened by him or by his staff. And so he's not in any, the FBI has essentially cleared him of any of this stuff, has said that, you know, you're not liable for any of it. But the headlines the last couple of days has been Alex Jones sends kiddie porn to Sandy Hook lawyers. That's essentially the headlines. It's like you might as well just have like killed a baby and stomped on a puppy at the same time. But this is something that I think with like kind of this restriction of Alex Jones. And yeah, the guy, he's an asshole. I mean, there's no doubt. But
it's a witch hunt, though.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope. And I think that it's really going to affect some of us in this podcasting community, if not all of us in this podcasting community, whether we talk about conspiracies or we don't talk about conspiracies.
Right. Right. The funny thing is Alex Jones has made a platform for acting the way that he does. To me personally, I think it's all just a big act. But
oh yeah,
he's an entertainer.
It would be, yeah, yeah. It'd be like Jim Harold getting caught up in some type of porn ring. Jim's been an influential part of the paranormal podcasting community since he was the first one that named his show The Paranormal Podcast. Jimmy Church, trying to think of a couple others that have been around for quite some time. If any of them got on to this point of this whole debacle like Alex Jones has, I honestly feel that all shows that have any dealings in paranormal, conspiracy, cryptozoology, anything like that, I think we would all be scrutinized.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to a friend of mine last night, and we were talking about this, a coworker, and it's like his point was if they would just have just like ignored Alex Jones. But see,
he's too good for the media. I mean, he's he gets ratings. Like they'd like, oh, look at him acting crazy again, and then everyone shares it, and you know,
right, exactly. And but if they had just ignored him, and they had just, you know, he would have just stayed where he is on the fringe, but they bring more and more attention to him, and stuff like this, especially, is just going to bolster. It's just going to be confirmation bias for a lot of people and say, well, see, they actually are trying to destroy Alex Jones by sending him kiddie porn. And, you know, so there must be something about it. And it's just going to keep going. It's just going to be this big circle. And it's never going to stop till somebody actually does stop. And, of course, he's ridiculous in the fact that he first offers like $1 million reward to whoever's the person was that sent him this stuff, which good luck with that, buddy. And then he had to take it down to $100,000 reward. And because he doesn't have that much money.
Well, and he made comments that they're interpreting as him threatening the people. And
yeah. But then he says statements like, well, I would never have sex with kids. I'm not a Democrat.
Because only Democrats, apparently.
So he's not helping either, you know.
Yeah, no, he's not helping with any of this stuff, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where they're going to have the biggest field day, is because he's going to turn it into conspiracy stuff, because they're coming after him specifically for whatever it is that he's trying to expose. But I had had a guy on Beyond Reason who believed that the government was attacking him through some type of technological warfare, where they were invisible and spraying him with chemicals that were making him sick. And he made a really good point as to why his story was truthful and valid, that somebody said to him, you know, you're not that important that the government would be trying to sabotage you. And he said to them, no, I'm not that important, but they are. Not that his story was valid, as far as I'm concerned, because it almost was a little out there, but it makes a lot of sense. Just because you're not that important of a person doesn't mean that the government wouldn't want to retaliate against you for something you've said. Now, is that what's happening with Alex Jones? More than likely, they're retaliating for stuff that he's saying that's not true compared to stuff that is true. And how much of it really is true that comes out of Alex Jones' mouth, I'm starting to really wonder myself.
Yeah, I mean, you got to a good point, because we've had some of these people on too that are victims of this kind of gang stalking stuff, and they're making references to possible mind control technology that exists. And unfortunately, you know, you see this in a lot of, you know, this almost textbook for a lot of schizophrenic cases too. Where do you think either this kind of victimized conspiracy mindset, or sometimes people with paranormal powers, what do you think about this, kind of the difference between being in tune to things or just madness? I mean, can you tell us some more about that story you're talking about?
Well, this guy had reported, there was some type of loud, it had to do with a military base. There was a military base that was close to his home. He had called to say that there was really loud activity going on there, and that it was disrupting his sleep. And then eventually he also had brought up that there were these like toxic clouds or some type of misting going on at his house after he had reported this stuff to the military base. And the whole thing was kind of making him physically sick. Eventually they stopped doing that, and they were somehow always constantly spraying him with some type of chemicals. He has a literal tin foil hat that he puts under his baseball cap, and puts wet paper towels underneath that, because that stops the irritation from whatever they're spraying him with. And he feels that they can somehow go through walls and be invisible, and they're spraying him with some type of irritant. And I think, you know, whether he was mentally ill or not, I don't know. But I think there's a really fine line when it comes to the paranormal and mental illness.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people that see things that aren't there. I mean, but we have psychics and mediums that say that they see and hear things that normal people can't. So is it really mental illness, or is it these people were seeing and hearing things and were just told, hey, this is a mental illness, here's some drugs to suppress this. And that was the end of it, because the drugs chemically altered their brain where they're not seeing these things anymore.
Right. I think that goes back to the discussion we had about schizophrenia and whether or not what you're actually seeing is quote unquote real. Is it an actual spiritual reality those people are actually perceiving? Is it the same way when someone that is really deeply into this conspiracy stuff, they can begin to see the black helicopters or whatever, or they can begin to see the fake agents in the woods or, you know, this kind of stuff. However, it gets even more complicated when you get into stuff like with Robert Guffey's Camellia, where you actually, you know, that this gang stalking technique actually does exist. And so it gets super complicated. And I think in those cases where you could already, like, these, it's not even just like government or military that do it. It could also be the private sector that can have this kind of technology as well. But they could purposely pick someone that is already mentally unstable, and that just, you know, says, well, they drive them even further insane, and they could just say, well, look, you know, he was obviously crazy.
Yeah, so, that's exactly what he's talking about.
There's such a fine line with so much of this stuff that we just don't know.
But it's better than just being normal, you know?
I'd like to get your thoughts on, because I was listening to one of your episodes, one of the more recent ones. This, the guy was talking about his dog man and Bigfoot encounters. You know, you look at something like Bigfoot, and, you know, we've said it many times where Bigfoot is, you could almost see that as being a possibility, however remote. But like something like dog man, I mean, that's just weird. I mean, there's something like that, just like you would think that should not exist.
Well, the one thing that I think when it comes to dog man, and I kind of talked to Linda Godfrey about this on Paratrooth Radio, that maybe it's some type of throwback to like the, giant wolves that were around.
Dire wolves.
Dire, yeah, the dire wolves. If there's maybe some type of throwback to them, even though they have these dogmen kind of have more human like hands, it's more of a werewolf type situation. But maybe that the dire wolves kind of morphed and mutated, kind of like a lot of these creatures that we believe exist today. I honestly think anything that's in the cryptozoology world, maybe it's more of a mutation from past animals that originally existed. They've just gotten kind of smaller. A lot of people believe that Bigfoot is a descendant of Gigantopithecus, even though there's a huge difference between the two species. So, and then I guess it kind of goes along the lines of, what are your beliefs as far as werewolves are concerned? Is it possibly the werewolf myth came from this creature that people saw, and they thought a man that went into the woods and then this creature comes out, the man turned into that. Did the werewolf myth come more from the disease where you grow hair all over your body, your gums kind of recede, and got these fang-like teeth? Or is it more so that these dogmen are some type of offshoot of the Bigfoot? Maybe a Bigfoot had gone feral, and the snout elongates a little bit, and the canine teeth are more protruding, and that's what happened. And then eventually these creatures started breeding with Bigfoot, and we have this dogman creature that we have today.
Yeah, I mean, there, I guess that all that could be a possibility. What's interesting to me is that the dogman has become really popular lately. You got a lot of podcasts and YouTube videos and all kinds of things that are out there about dogman. And I think a lot of it is due to like Linda Godfrey's Beast of Bray Road, where she kind of popularized that, and all of a sudden people more and more started seeing dogman. And I feel like it's just this, it's another aspect of this phenomenon where it's entering into the popular culture, and then people start seeing it, which enters it more into the popular culture, and people start seeing it more and more. And some of those could just be stories, but it seems like, again, this is something that's manifesting itself to people out in the woods now as, instead of Sasquatch, it's Dogman.
Right.
So,
and that kind of goes along the lines of the co-creation thing, like you were talking about. Like, are these things just picking up on popular culture, so that's what they manifest as?
Yeah. It's really something. It's really something that does make you wonder about it. Well, Justin, I mean, this has been awesome, man. It's been awesome having you on the show.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank
nice
you
to meet
for
you.
Making the time for it.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. And you know, the entire reason that I decided to have you on, Adam, on my show was because I listened to you guys for a couple of years now, and you guys always do a great show. I love listening to the evolution that has gone on between the intros and how you guys do the show. You know, hearing Luke and Rob and then Surfiel, and you know, you guys interact very well together, and I love when you guys have people in the studio compared to over the phone. I can only hope that I can get to that point where I can have people in studio, because it's been very rarely that I've ever had somebody in studio to do an interview with. But yeah, I do appreciate you guys having me on. It's been an honor and a privilege.
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people find the show? Where can people get in contact with you? What's next for you?
Well, they can find both shows, paratruthradio.com, beyondreason.net. I also have a personal website, justincancellari.com, because I am also a author. I am working on my second fictional book, the sequel to my first book, which was The Legendary Creature Project, The Griffin. And I keep kind of trying to think if I want to do some type of nonfiction book, because I've been doing this for so long that I've got so many different theories, but it'd have to be honing on one of those particular theories to actually do a book that hasn't been already done before. But the fiction books are really more my style, because I have so many different ideas that I've already jotted down that I really need to get those down on paper. But that's really what's going on right now. Beyond Reason and Paratruth are on hiatus for a little bit. I'm really hoping to get them started before October, but October was my original date that I was trying to stick to as far as bringing them back. But I'm really hoping to get to a point where my work schedule isn't so hectic and I can bring them back way beforehand. Even if I can just bring them back at a monthly basis compared to the weekly that we were doing before.
Yes, absolutely. And I encourage you to come back.
Yes, please.
Because we need more voices out there, and we want to try to include you more into the conversation as well, Justin. Well, guys, yeah. Stay on the line for us. We are going to close this section out, and we will be back briefly to close out the show on Conspiranormal. All right, guys, we got a new sponsor that we're going to talk about called Blinkist. And they are this new company that is taking books and summarizing them.
So, kind of like a Cliff Notes.
Yeah, kind of like a Cliff Notes, except it's like a 16-minute summary. So basically, you know, it can be kind of hard to find the time to sit down and learn a little bit more when you're out on the go and you're listening to podcasts like ours. And it's not easy when you get on social media and it's so addictive, time-consuming. So you might think you don't have the time to read a book or to develop yourself in any kind of substantial way. So this is an app that we highly recommend, and it's called Blinkist, as I mentioned before. Blinkist is for busy people like you guys that are out there listening to the show that want to get the main point of the book quickly without reading the entire book. So with an audio feature, Blinkist also makes it easy to finish 4 books a day while you're on the go, which 8 million people are now using Blinkist, and it has a massive and growing library from self-help, business, health, to history books. So that's very important to me, history. I checked that out today. There's a lot of history books on there. One of which looks interesting, called The Congo from Leopold to Kabila, or Kabila, the new ruler of the Congo. If you guys are any familiar with that, you can go on there in less than 15 minutes and you can get on there and fast track your path to a more intelligent, informed, healthy you. And some of the books they've got are some of the stuff that we've talked about on the show. There's stuff like self-improvement and New Thought, like How to Make People Like You in 90 Seconds or Less.
All right.
By Nicholas Boothman, or The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F by Mark Manson. So those sound a little bit interesting. So if you want to check those out, those are there as well. So what they're doing right now, guys, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for the Conspiranormal audience. So go to Blinkist.com/Conspiranormal to start your free 7-day trial. And that's Blinkist, that's spelled Blinkist, Blinkist.com/Conspiranormal. And Conspiranormal, of course, is Conspiranormal. So check them out today, guys. And it also helps us out a lot. Thanks.
And now, back to the show.
So, that was a good interview with Justin Cancellari from the Beyond Reason podcast and the Paratruth podcast. I was pretty impressed. It was a good discussion.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
Between the three of us, for sure. I think we're definitely kindred spirits with him.
Yeah, it's cool to talk to someone real well-rounded, and you can kind of just shoot the shit.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you know, this whole Alex Jones thing, I mean, it does kind of worry me.
Yeah.
I mean, does it, what do you think?
Well, I think he's just such a media spectacle that it's totally trivialized our entire world pretty much.
Yeah.
But, he being a public figure and trying to use like email accounts and receiving things from thousands of random people every day. And I was talking about how in the media, you know, it really doesn't matter what's behind the headline. No one's going to read that shit. All everyone is seeing is just Alex Jones, kiddie porn.
Right, and they're making the conflation.
Yeah, so
with it,
no matter what it is legally or what actually happened, that's going to be, you know, what's in people's minds. But I also talked about that, you know, Alex Jones was early on throwing around just, you know, like it was nothing, accusing people of being pedophiles.
Yeah, the whole Pizzagate
stuff. Yeah, so it's like, you know, not that there never is any kind of weird shit like that. We've talked about that before, but. You know, just throwing it around like it's meaningless and, you know, it's probably going to come back.
Well, I mean, and he did promote the Sandy Hook stuff. He promoted all that Sandy Hook was crisis actors.
Yeah.
And it was his listeners and a few others, but I think primarily his that did go and like are actually harass people. Trying and thinking that they were being crusaders and thinking that they were going to expose this big evil or whatever. You know, that's been one of the big, I think, the big fallacies about the whole Sandy Hook thing is people thinking that it was just all crisis actors and nothing ever happened.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I understand if there's legal consequences for doing that.
Yeah, because these families,
actual people in the real world, and we have, you know, there's defamation and all kinds of different laws.
Yeah,
already.
Because these families have been harassed.
Yeah,
by people that have listened primarily to Alex Jones, but at the same time, it's like, you know, he's getting blamed for a lot of that stuff, but he's also been blamed not just for that, but for like getting Trump elected, apparently.
Right, and this whole kind of alternative media, you know, cultural shift that we're seeing. You know, it's an attempt to demonize this entire world.
Right.
Not just right-wing, you know, political people.
Well, I go on YouTube today to try to find out a little bit more about this, and I get this newscast from Connecticut, right? One of the local stations there. And then, you know, they're a little snarky about it, but whatever. They still report exactly what Jones said and show his like craziness, his ranting and raving, which actually does not help anything. But right below the video, there's a link to the Encyclopedia Britannica article about Sandy Hook.
Right.
Which this kind of tangentially has to do with Sandy Hook. It doesn't have to completely do with Sandy Hook. But just, I guess, because the keyword Sandy Hook was in there, they added this. So we're getting all this kind of stuff every time you go now to YouTube where they're trying to be responsible to the truth. You know, like, they're really, I don't know. It's like,
well, you know, dude, honestly, we're one of the only podcasts that deal with, that talk about, you know, kind of weird conspiracy.
Yeah.
The weird conspiracy world that hasn't really openly on the show talked about our continuity of podcasting plans, because a lot of them do talk about that and like,
uh-huh,
you know, are way more worried than we are.
This latest thing though, I mean, it's just like if they can get rid of someone that is as big as Alex Jones, they can get rid of the little person as well. But just, you know, it's almost to me like when you live in a neighborhood and you can't get certain services because things are happening there where people are getting robbed and there's like this bad element in a neighborhood. Right.
Right. Yeah.
So people are getting, you know, so like you can't get a delivery of something that you want because that delivery service will not go into that neighborhood.
Right.
Okay. Well, 90 or 80% of the people there are probably good people working, trying to do the best that they can. There's that bad element there that's preventing that from happening. And I feel of them getting the services that they might, or the luxuries that they might want to get. So I feel like it's almost for us as this small podcast to hold somebody like Alex Jones accountable when he goes and he rants and he raves and he offers $1 million. Because
what he does affects us.
Right, because what he does affects us. And when he says stuff like, well, I'm not a pedophile, I would never have sex with children because I'm not a Democrat, that is furthering even more people just like hating him, and then by extent hating people people like us as well. Because, you know, I've said it before, you know, I've approached certain people to come on this show. They won't do it because of the name Conspiranormal, because of that stigma that is now on this whole idea of conspiracy theory, that it is some kind of, it has some kind of negative connotation because what has happened politically and what has happened because of people like Alex Jones. And, you know, now it's like, you know, and I've said, you know, look, listen to this show. You know, I've had people on like Michael Hughes, who's like not a Trump supporter or an Alex Jones supporter at all, just the opposite. And we've talked about this, and we've talked honestly about stuff like the Pizzagate. Okay. We've talked honestly about that stuff, and we've talked honestly about what has grown off from that, from like QAnon. But yet these stupid algorithms could potentially remove people like us.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, and so the conspiracy theory culture, it survived the right-wing extremism of the 90s. You know, there was all kinds of people that weren't in that world that, you know, they saw it come and go. And
yeah.
So that's really the goal, I think, is for this culture to survive this wave of right-wing extremism and co-option. I mean, it can survive, I think. But mm-hmm. now we have this whole, the means of distributing all the information is controlled by a small group. It's like it's like it went backwards, because the genesis of all this is from the post office. You know, it's all mail, catalogs, books, alternative bookstores, you know, home produced videos. There were shortwave stations. I mean, that was all moving away from the corporate media to have independent distribution channels. But now everyone is back on the internet, and there's not even a way that people would be led to the information if it's not on the internet. So it's like,
yeah,
it's all beholden now in the medium, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's, I think people are going to, and what's going to happen is more of the extreme stuff is probably going to be keep being taken off of YouTube, and it's probably going to find its place somewhere else. But I'm just hoping, and you know, I don't have a really too much of a bone in this fight, considering that we don't have that many subscribers on YouTube. So go to YouTube, Conspiranormal podcast, and subscribe, please. But we don't have too many subscribers on there, so it doesn't hurt us. But I know people that have tried to monetize. I'm just saying as it stands right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Like people that are trying to really live off their YouTube monetization, and it's really hurting people. And there's other podcasts out there that have nothing to do with conspiracy theories, that will not touch conspiracy theories, that I know, that are just purely paranormal podcasts, and they are starting to hurt because of this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just kind of like this crazy world that we're living in, where everything is seen through everything is political now.
Yeah, absolutely everything.
Yeah. What did we have in the last few days?
What?
Here in Nashville, the statue that got, you know, over there in Centennial Park, over where the Parthenon is, that got spray painted with, like, it said, like, they're racist, and it was something about, like, Civil War dead or Confederate dead. I can't really read the inscription on it because the pictures that were sent me were too low quality.
I'm pretty sure it's just a war dead monument. It's to any general. It's not to, you know.
But this is the climate that we're living in. You know, it's...
Everything is that politicized, yeah.
Yeah, everything is that politicized. And it's affecting everybody.
And I think a lot of people like us who actually do interact with a bunch of different people, and they feel like they're losing touch with the majority of people because they're going like extreme right or extreme left. And mm-hmm. you're just kind of like, just like you feel like you're like losing all your friends, and you meet someone that are right, and then like you become Facebook friends with them, and all they do is just like all this like super hateful stuff all the time. And, you know, it's, yeah, man.
Yeah, on both sides.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, I've got relatives fighting over pictures of Melania Trump on my Facebook feed. I mean, no shit, man. I mean, that's That's really what's going on. I mean, it's just people. I mean, there's a certain amount of this whole brother against brother mentality right now that really kind of scares me. And people are.
It's because like, there's too much.
This is separating families.
It's because there's too much communication. That's all it is. I mean, it's just there's too much communication, too much interaction,
too much shit going on.
Yeah, it's information overload, and it's the death of the civil society that you had. You know, mm-hmm. We're in the bowling alone society, and now everyone is turned on by these devices, has those increased communications, and all those old bonds have been dying for the last few decades. So, yeah, it's madness.
Madness.
Yes, it is. And if you'd like to be part of our madness, find us on Patreon. And where can they find us there, Serafiel?
You can find us at patreon.com/conspiranormal. Or if you want to just do a one-time donation, you can go to conspiranormal.com.
Yes. That is the main place to find us. A dollar gets you in to get all the archives from the Patreon. So, guys, we're going to be back next week, and we're going to be in here getting alchemically stoned. That's how it's going to go.
Oh, man.
All right, guys. Join us next week on Conspiranormal. Modelo.
To book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.